Welcome to the Business of Government Hour, a conversation about management with a government executive who is changing the way government does business. The Business of Government Hour is produced by the IBM Center for the Business of Government, which was created in 1998 to encourage discussion and research into new approaches to improving government effectiveness. You can find out more about the center by visiting us on the web at businessofgovernment.org. And now, the Business of Government Hour.
Welcome to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Michael Keegan, your host and managing editor of the Business of Government magazine. In an era when information and data have become major strategic assets, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, HHS, sits atop a vast array of both data and information that, if leveraged properly and applied innovatively, could transform health and healthcare delivery within this country. With advances in technology and the development of various collaborative platforms, we are witnessing a prime opportunity to make a vision of the future a reality of today. It is about encouraging innovators to use health data to develop applications that raise the awareness of health and health system performance and spark community action to improve health. And the HHS Office of Chief Technologist is pursuing such an effort. What is the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services technology innovation strategy? What is HHS doing to make data more accessible? How is HHS using technologies and innovations to meet its mission? And what is HHS doing to be more transparent, improve accountability, and increase opportunities for public engagement? We will explore these questions and so much more with our very special guest, Brian Seebeck, Chief Technology Officer at the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. Welcome, Brian.
Well, thank you very much. I'm glad to be here.
So, Brian, before we kick off our conversation, I'd like to set some context with our guests. And so would you give us a brief overview of the history and mission of your department, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services?
Sure. So HHS, Department of Health and Human Services, is a massive organization. And keep in mind, I'm relatively new to the department. I started roughly 9 or 10 months ago or so. But what's really blown my mind since I've gotten there is just the breadth of the work that the department does. You got to understand, and most people I think don't realize this, but the department encompasses major agencies such as the National Institutes of Health, the Food and Drug Administration, the Center for Disease Control and Prevention, the Center for Medicare and Medicaid Services, which is the largest insurance company in the world, essentially. I mean, this is a massive place. And what's also very interesting is that there are almost every group in the department really does touch the lives of every single American, pretty much. And so the scope is huge. The mission is incredibly important. And the breadth of things that we do is astonishing. And so it's been fascinating for me to get involved and to start to learn about some of the things that we do.
Yeah. And I want to know more about what you do. We can just jump to that. Could you give us a brief overview of the mission of HHS's Office of Chief Technologist? What was the genesis for creating this role? And perhaps you could highlight some of your specific responsibilities.
Sure. So the Office of the Chief Technology Officer, I guess is the right way to put it, was created a few years ago at the start of the Obama administration. And my predecessor, Todd Park, who's now the CTO for the United States in the White House, was the first CTO for the department. And really, you know, I think the role of the position has sort of evolved over time. Todd had a very large focus on this idea of liberating data from various places in the department, with the idea that that data could actually be utilized to affect massive transformations in the delivery of healthcare in this country, the ability to affect public health, and the delivery of human services, which are really the three main areas that the department focuses on. As I said, over time, the role has changed or evolved, I should say, a little bit. We still focus pretty heavily on data, but there are other areas that we look at as well. The way that I like to think about it is that we look at various assets that we have in the department and how which assets are sort of undervalued or underutilized and bring value or activate those assets to great effect. That's generally what we focus on.
So I've had a number of CIOs on, and lately, within the last year, I've had a number of CTOs on. For our purposes, what's the difference between a chief technologist or a chief technology officer and a chief information officer?
Good question. And I think it actually probably the answer to that probably depends on who you're talking to and what organization you're talking about. In HHS, our CIO is a guy named Frank Bateman, wonderful guy who, you know, is very forward thinking, has a lot of great ideas about how technology can be leveraged to better execute the mission of the department. His focus is really more, I would say, on the sort of internal, you know, pipes and plumbing and the things that make the system work, right? So this is everything from email to HR IT systems to financial systems to things like that. And so what Frank really focuses on in his role as CIO is, you know, how can we make the processes more efficient by using technology and by leveraging IT to do some of these things. One of the interesting things about my job in particular is that I actually have two titles. One title is Chief Technology Officer. The other title is Entrepreneur in Residence. And in many ways, I actually think the EIR side of my title is a little more descriptive of what I actually do. One thing I've learned over time, and I say this as a technologist and as a big geek, right, and somebody who loves technology and thinks that, you know, usually jumps to a technology solution is the first one because it's just how my brain works. But one of the things I've learned over time is that technology is rarely a solution to a problem. Technology can be an enabler, it can be a catalyst, it can be an accelerant, but it often needs to be sort of layered on top of some more fundamental change, which would be usually culture change or process change. And so that's where I think the EIR side of my job comes in. And a lot of what we're focusing on right now is how to actually affect cultural change within the department so that we can put technology on top of it and actually make things better.
And you are an entrepreneur. I mean, your background is such, right?
Yeah. I started a company in 97 in San Francisco, enterprise software company, and moved over to London in 2005 to start up the European and Asian operations for the company. So I have entrepreneur blood. I guess, is one way to phrase it.
Well, you know, think about your responsibilities and your role. And I know you've been there for about 10 months, mm-hmm. correct? And what are your three top challenges that you've faced, and how have you sought to address those challenges?
So, you know, I think the biggest challenge really that we run into is just the sort of culture of government, right? So I was saying before that the way I look at what our office does is to find undervalued assets or underutilized assets across the department and recognize the value in those things. And if I look at data as sort of the initial effort that we undertook for this, I think, you know, you can definitely look at it from that perspective. We have massive amounts of data stored within the department that we either collect or create or curate. And there is a huge amount of potential to be realized if we can make that data open and available. So starting 3 years ago, starting with Todd and my group, we, you know, embarked on this mission to essentially change the dynamic around the culture of data sharing in the department. And I think we've been very successful in that. The default setting is definitely now moved from closed to open, and people do absolutely think about and understand the value in putting data out there. And so I think if we look at sort of that process as an analog to other processes that we might undertake to recognize value in other assets, the one that I have really been thinking a lot about recently is the asset of people. Right. Mm-hmm. So I mentioned in the beginning that the department is massive. Right. And it's massive not just in terms of the things we do, but in terms of the number of people. We have about 90,000 people that work at the department. You got to understand that this is a government institution. Right. It's a very structured, siloed, sort of command and control oriented organization. And that definitely has its benefits. There are some things that operate very well in that environment. At the same time, it is somewhat stifling in terms of the potential for, you know, creative thought or experimentation. These are the things that we're really focused on trying to enable. If we can teach people how to experiment and give them the freedom to experiment, mm-hmm. what we believe will be a direct result of that is innovation. In fact, that's the definition of innovation that I'm working with right now. I kind of hate the word innovation, decided that I'm not a huge fan of it because it doesn't really mean a whole lot. What we're saying is that we believe that innovation is the direct result of this freedom to experiment. So if I can teach people how to experiment, not only can I do that because there is a methodology to experimentation, but it also encodes the ability possibility for an unsuccessful experiment to happen, which I think is a critical thing for government to be able to do. And then secondly, I can teach you how to experiment. I can allow for this possibility of unsuccessful experiments, but I can also give you the freedom to do that by, you know, creating some space for experimentation to happen. And so that's really a lot of what we focus on when it comes to recognizing the value in the people that we have in the department.
So I know, though you've only been at HHS in your current role for a fairly short amount of time, you're not new to government. I mean, you did a stint at DC and Maryland as well. Mm-hmm. Leading innovation, a word that you're not too particularly fond of, but nonetheless, in such an expansive department, can be fraught with unanticipated surprises. What has surprised you since taking your role?
One thing that surprised me when I first got into government a few years ago in D.C., I came in with the stereotypical view of the government bureaucrat, right? The clock-punching bureaucrat who did nothing but, you know, write out a pension. And, you know, I think that's the popular concept, right, and perspective on what happens inside government. And what I found, and this has literally repeated itself in D.C. and in Maryland and now in HHS, is that I have met and worked with now some of the smartest and most dedicated people I've ever had the opportunity to come into contact with in my life. And that gives me great hope, right? Because most of the people that, you know, if you work for government, you're working for government not because you're getting paid a lot of money. You're doing it typically for the right reasons. And so that's been a huge surprise for me, just given my initial kind of sort of stereotypical view coming in. That's also why I really believe that if we can leverage some of that and some of that potential, we can achieve amazing things.
Well, I often ask my guests with similar backgrounds as yourself in terms of they've played in the private sector and now they're in government. To that end, given your experience, what makes an effective leader? What are some of the qualities of an effective leader?
Okay, so a few things. First of all, you have to be willing to take some chances. And I don't mean, you know, wild, crazy bets, right? I mean, you know, intelligent, thoughtful acceptance of risk in order to try to move the ball forward in certain areas. Secondly, you have to give people that work for you the freedom to execute their responsibilities, and then hold them accountable for those for that execution. One of the things that government has a big problem with is giving people space and letting people kind of do things. You mentioned DC as my first government job, and I think one of the great things about Mayor Fenty, who was the mayor that brought me on board, was that he recognized that the right way to do things would be to hire good people and just let them do their jobs. And when you look at the amount of things that happened under the Fenty administration and the sort of way that the city moved forward, I think that you can see the effect of that. And I think that's a really effective trait in a leader. This is something that exists in spades at the department. When I was talking to the secretary and the deputy secretary about the job in the first place, it became abundantly clear that that was sort of how they operated as well. I wouldn't have taken the job if it wasn't the case. And so far, it's been absolutely true. They are great people to work for because they absolutely get that fact. Second thing, and I'll quote one of my other old bosses, Governor O'Malley here. He likes to point out that if you can't measure something, you can't manage it. Data and the analysis of data as it relates to very specific goals that get set out are critical to managing an operation. And I think that's something that more governments need to kind of pay attention to. In government in general, we have really a few levers that we can pull, but not too many. And the thing is, if we can figure out how to set goals, very specific goals and very measurable goals, and then pull the levers that we can pull, and then track how the pulling of those levers actually affect our progress towards that goal, then you actually have much more information to start to make decisions. And so I think that's another key trait, is looking at the initiatives that you undertake and how those initiatives actually help you achieve certain goals that you set out ahead of time.
What is the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services technology innovation strategy? We will ask Brian Seebeck, Chief Technology Officer at HHS, when our conversation continues on the Business of Government Hour.